Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Today's the day we do Mythbusters. Co-host is Chris Rossini. Chris, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Dr. Paul.
So what do we have in store for our program today?
We're going to tackle a subject that we haven't talked about yet on Mythbusters, and that's eminent domain. And we're going to specifically talk about Trump's views, and it really shows philosophically how he views the individual and private property versus the state and collectives. So I'm going to read some quotes to you, Dr. Paul, and you could give me some thoughts on what you think. So to start with, he says first that no roads would be built. So he says, quote, "You can't build a road without eminent domain in order to survive as a country. How can you not have roads?" Is that true, Dr. Paul?
Well, hardly, because, you know, government never built a road in their life. Governments use business people to build it. And when governments are in charge, though, of where they're built and how they're built and the details, they pretty often build lousy roads. So what you have to look at right now are the conditions of our roads, and they're not very good. But the other big thing, it becomes political on where they build the roads. Then you run into problems like they had in Alaska, you know, the road and the bridge to nowhere, and it's still sitting there, and they've spent millions and millions of dollars on it. So governments aren't very good at this, and they think that a lot of people, if I talk to somebody who's very sympathetic to free markets and open to libertarianism, they say, yeah, except what about the roads? But, you know, it's not a tremendous hurdle to overcome because, you know, if you look at some very good roads right now in private developments, those roads are well kept and they're paid for by the owners, and the government is not involved in that. So there are a lot of examples of this. And you can, private industry, especially in this day and age, could charge with tolls. Governments charge with tolls, and people tend to be unhappy, but at least they would be paid for, and you wouldn't have, and the people who don't have cars wouldn't have to pay for the highways, you know. But it could be done privately, but psychologically, the people aren't quite ready for this. But I believe that it would be done. There'd be interesting communities to have good roads. It could be done more locally than with the federal government. They have a purpose to come together and build good roads for business reasons. If you're in a downtown area and you don't have the federal government sending in a grant, causing the prices to be twice as high and twice as slow building them, the businessman has an interest in getting together and say, hey, look, we have 20 businesses down here. Let's have a homeowner's agreement. And they would take care of the roads. And it wouldn't be that disastrous. But this whole idea that you have to have the government to build roads, that just isn't true, even though traditionally that's been the case. But they are inept, and I think the best way to think of a serious consequence is, you know, the road to nowhere, because the money is distributed for political reasons. It's not distributed by, common sense, like a business might do it or private owners might do it. It's the money is collected through highway funds, and then it throws it in a pot. They spend it on other things, and then you have the politicians going and playing these games. Well, how am I going to get my money back to my district? Well, they probably shouldn't have taken it in the first place. But then again, if you did have a fund, a national fund to build roads, you could probably run that department with two people. Just say, well, how much money did you send, you know, to the state? You write a check and send it back. Fix your highways, something along that line. You know, it's interesting that when the interstate highway system was developed by Eisenhower, he recognized that that wasn't a federal function. It wasn't a responsibility of the federal government, so therefore he had to write a justification, and his justification was for national defense purposes, like a lot of things that we do today, everything, national security, national defense, and a lot of people are involved. And it becomes politicized because a lot of bucks are being made, a lot of big labor costs are being made once the federal government gets involved. Every federal project with highways has to obey Davis-Bacon laws, which means that labor costs might be 50% or 80% higher than the market might be. So it's an inefficient way to do it. But this whole idea that there wouldn't be roads and that you have to scare people and say, Oh, under this circumstance, the one thing you don't want to have happen is let the market determine roads. Well, they shouldn't be so frightened about that. And if an individual understood how markets work, they wouldn't be that, intimidated by the thought that industries and private individuals could deal with having good roads.
Yes. Next, we're going to deal with the idea of collectivism and the 1900s, if they weren't a learning lesson of what the horrors of that collectivism can produce. Here's Donald Trump on Eminent Domain. If you're going to rip down a house and build another house, no way. But if you're going to build a factory that's going to have 5,000 jobs, that's entirely different. What do you think, Dr. Paul?
Well, it sounds like corporatism. And he claims that the 5,000 jobs is so much more valuable. And he claims that people who are having their land threatened by the government and another private industry or private corporation wanting it, all these owners, he decries them. They're just wanting money. They're just hogs of money, and they're concerned about money. But what's his justification for doing this? And that is for the businessman to make money and for government to have higher tax revenues and have the government get more money. But he said that it's the individual who clings to the house that is the evil there, and they're being selfish and mean because they don't want to sell it. But this could be taken care of, people who don't want to sell. Anytime they plan something, a road or a pipeline or a building, they should have very many different options. If they have to use the eminent domain, if there's an option, all of a sudden people might want certain groups to come in. But, the other thing that Trump reveals about himself is he obviously, and he's never claimed he's interested in Austrian economics or private property rights. He's interested in corporations making money and being able to buy, you get land that might be in a good location to build another building, this sort of thing. But he doesn't understand the subjective theory of value. He can't conceive of somebody wanting to cling to a house that was in the family for 100 years, and they have an emotional attachment to it. And he says that, no, we'll just give them money, they'll get more money, and they can build a bigger house and all this. And he doesn't understand that. But which means that he's a throwback to actually the Adam Smith days and the Karl Marx's day, because they believe that a house or whatever you build, the value is based on the labor. So if you have two houses that are identical, but one has this emotional attachment, has a greater value to the family, and there's a psychological benefit, that is different. And that's called the subjective theory of value, and that's what Austrian economists believe in, and that value is set by that and not by the labor that goes into it. That's why he's missing the boat on here, and he dismisses individuals and private property owners, and he looks at it in a collective sense. How do the corporations make profits? And he's right that sometimes that might happen. You might get a business and more jobs, and the city got more tax revenue, but it really doesn't justify it. More likely what will happen is they'll go through Kelo example, the Connecticut case, where there was a woman, Suzette Kelo, wouldn't give it up, and she finally lost it, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they ruled 5-4 that she had to give it up for the benefit of the public. And yet it was another corporation. In this case, it was transferring from one individual to another individual. It wasn't the government coming in and taking it for a government purpose. It was an individual to an individual. They wanted to build a convention center, which everybody would just love. Well, 10 years later, it's more than that. Now, it's probably 12 years later. It was never built. She lost her house, and it's a parking lot right now. They had to tear down the house, and so it was a bad economic decision. It was a bad decision on property ownership. It was a bad decision on individual liberty. It was a bad decision for special interests who thought they were going to benefit. So when eminent domain is loose for private industry especially, they're coming in with a club. It's corporatism at its worst. They're in business with the government, and they go to the government and say, hey, look, we're going to have this neat building and 1,000 more people working. They're all going to be paying taxes. How can you argue against that? Well, you can argue the side of liberty, and maybe it'll end up as a mistake, and maybe it would occur without that. Maybe it would occur voluntarily and accomplish getting, you know, a convention center by private sources. You can't ever tell. But just because it immediately disappears doesn't mean that it wouldn't happen. And how much liberty should you sacrifice? And when you sacrifice the principle of private property ownership, that's a big deal. And it looks to me like when people talk about eminent domain being a great thing, they don't have much interest in private property ownership, and they don't have much understanding about what liberty is all about.
Yes. Next, you touched on this in your last answer, but I'll read the direct quote from Trump. He says, most of the time, these people, they just want money, okay? It's very rarely that they say, I love my house, it's the greatest thing there, because these people can go buy a house that's five times bigger in a better location. So, Dr. Paul, if government can just take your property, is it really your property to begin with, or do they just view it as theirs and you're basically just a renter?
No, I think it reinforces what you're alluding to, and that is that the government owns everything. The people don't. They own your life and they own your income. The income tax was decried in 1913 when they brought it in, that was a bad thing to do. Even if it was only 1%, they were making the declaration that everything belongs to the government and they will decide what you can keep. And now today it's very complex and they have all these rules and regulations and a tax code that nobody can read or understand, dictating on what you can do to keep what is considered your money. So that is the big problem. This is an additional thing that the government starts with ownership of the land, and they will allow you to keep it under certain circumstances. If you want to keep it, then you have to go to court, and not many people can afford to go to court and confront big business and, you know, the big corporations or the government because they have a lot more power and clout, and they always couch it in words, well, it's for the better good of society. Well, I think in terms of what is the better good for the individual and that individual's liberty. So it's entirely different under those circumstances. So I think people should reassess it as an ownership and who owns the land. So if it's eminent domain and it gets carried away, which it seems to right now, because destruction of property can occur just with regulations, and the big argument now is that a takings? And sometimes you get a court ruling that favors that. But it is. It's a takings. I consider the private ownership of land now precarious, because what I claim we do is we don't own our land. We rent our land from the government, and they tell us what we can do with it, and they tell us how to use it, how we can sell it, and all these sort of things. So private ownership of land is not well respected in this country. Eminent domain and a careless attitude about that is responsible for that attitude.
Finally, Dr. Paul, we'll try to drill into the major issue, and that's cronyism in this country. It's running wild. And that's the marriage of corporations and the government. They both scratch each other's back, to put it one way. In fact, Trump is putting his eminent domain uses to work. He's already approved the Keystone Pipeline. Is that cronyism, Dr. Paul?
Well, yes, it is. He got in on that pretty late, and I imagine they used a lot of eminent domain. The pipeline's, you know, just ready to go. That is more difficult. But yes, he had no problems with eminent domain. But that wasn't what was holding it up, you know, by the far left. They were holding it up because of their understanding of who owns the land. It's the radical environmentalists that own the land. So it was a contest within the government. So yes, it is something that will hold things up. But you should not permit it. The railroads were an example of this, giving them eminent domain and giving land and all these kind of things. And most of the railroads in the early years went bankrupt. It made them less efficient because they got everything for free. Some of the railroads that did it on their own and didn't depend on government subsidies, They were the few that didn't go bankrupt. So eminent domain encourages moral hazard to do the wrong thing. There was an interesting case in 1923 that I thought was fascinating. In 1923, they raised the minimum wage, and it went to the court. And one person was fighting it. And the court ruled in favor of the person that says, you can't make me pay an increase in the minimum wage because the individual has not improved production. And it's a takings. They claimed it was a takings from the person who had his private money and transferring it over in a welfare system of sorts. And they said, that's unconstitutional. And they used the eminent domain provision on that. They declared this was, not a proper takings on it. So they ruled it. But that didn't last long. Roosevelt changed that later on, and the whole welfare state blossomed into it. So, if you look at this as a takings, the whole welfare state is a takings, and I guess our foreign policy is involved in many takings as well. But, I have a suggestion that people ought to consider, because there's a lot of transition away from private ownership to government and corporate ownership through the use of eminent domain. The United States federal government now owns about a third of the land, the size of everything east of the Mississippi River. So why don't we reverse this and have some type of an eminent domain where the states and the individuals can declare, well, this is really belongs to the people, and we want this land returned to private ownership. Not going to happen, but it's actually what we should do is we should reverse it. And, a lot of people, look at the eminent domain provision and the payment, a fair payment, a just compensation as, something the Constitution was introduced. But that isn't the case. Eminent domain has been around for hundreds, if not many hundreds of years. The king had the right to take the property. But the king took the property and he usually didn't pay for it. He just needed it and wanted it, and he took it. But the reason the founders put this in wasn't to promote eminent domain. They knew it existed. It was just sort of a status quo. People expected that, but they weren't to do it without, the just compensation. But it's way out of hand now. If anything, a good libertarian would move in the opposite direction. It should be very, very narrow. And we should be able to defend ourselves in a way that the market can handle many of these problems, whether it's roads or buildings or what. But you do not should depend on eminent domain. You should not endorse this business of corporatism, where governments and big business get together and undermine the private ownership of individuals, houses or farmland or whatever it is. And it comes up constantly. And, I live in a state, Texas. There are tremendous amounts of pipelines going to and fro. I'm sure a bunch might have been used for eminent domain, but I think a lot in Texas, they just sort of accept the fact that there are pipelines. I know a lot of pipelines, they just send them in different directions if somebody won't approve them, and they can send highways in different directions. There's been some big oil companies and producers that never used eminent domain because they thought it was wrong, and they still were able to put their pipelines in. And highways would be the same way. Some people would be anxious to maybe have the highway come through. But it should be done under a condition of ownership, who owns the land, and volunteerism, and through contract. And I think things would work out pretty well. So I think a good libertarian, people who believe in private property ownership, should be very emphatic. The land belongs to the people, and they should not endorse casually this idea that eminent domain is a fancy tool. It helps big business produce jobs, and it helps the government collect more revenue. That is doomed to failure because, believe me, when the government gets the money, they don't know how to spend it. They usually make things work, and they are good at building bridges to nowhere. And I would like investors to decide where the bridges go, and they will usually go to somewhere. Anyway, Chris, want to thank you very much for being with us today on this program.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Good, and I want to thank our viewers today for joining us, and please come back soon to the Liberty Report.